care for freed slaves who were ill, and to give them a proper and dignified burial when they died. It provided the rural residents a place where they could meet, worship, and feel a sense of identity. Later, it raised the funds to open a one-room schoolhouse, and once a year it held a harvest celebration with marching, singing, and home-cooked food. The documentary The Contradictions of Fairhope explores how this community and its annual tradition has been completely transformed by something called footwash. Tens of thousands of outsiders today descend on this little town to gamble, to do drugs, sell sex, sell guns, and generally go wild for a few days. The film is about a collision of generations of history and tradition, and the filmmakers join us here today on Radio Times. Esipatha Murkison, a well-known name, I'm sure, to our listeners, is the co-director and co-executive producer of The Contradictions of Fairhope. She's, of course, best known for playing Lieutenant Anita Van Buren in Law and Order, something she did for 15 years. She was also featured in Steven Spielberg's Lincoln. She received an Emmy, a Golden Globe, and a SAG Award for her performance as Nanny Crosby in the HBO movie Lackawanna Blues. And it's a great pleasure to have you with us on Radio Times. Good morning.
Thank you. Good morning.
Also with this is Raquel Metcalf, co-director, co-executive producer, and writer of The Contradictions of Fairhope. He's vice president, chief counsel of Ameriprise Financial. I should say his 99-year-old grandmother is a member of Fairhope. And Raquel, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you.
This is your first film that you have ever done.
It is. It is our very first feature. Yeah.
And as a longtime actor, how much of a revelation has this been for you?
Oh, it's been incredible. I mean, certainly when you're in front of the camera, there are things that you know are going on behind the camera. But when you get behind the camera, and specifically with something documentary, it's a very different animal. So there was a huge learning curve that I had to go through. But I had my partner in crime here to help me. And we're very pleased.
And how do you know this partner in crime of yours?
We met like 8 years ago. We have a mutual friend who he used to live next door to, and we met at a poker game.
Oh, goodness gracious. Well, we'll get back to that. I want to talk about your now 99-year-old grandmother, because in many ways she was the spark for this documentary.
Yeah, it's true. My 99-year-old grandmother, Bessie Hunter, she would always talk to me about slavery. She has these very vivid memories of slavery because her grandmother was born into slavery. And she would talk with me a lot about slavery, and the conversations eventually evolved into conversations about the Benevolent Society and its history, and that's how we got the story.
Some of the most powerful footage from the film are, they tend to be older women and some older men, but largely older women talking about their mothers, their grandmothers, people they knew that were slaves,
exactly.
And they could tell them stories. And I was just thinking about how powerful those oral histories, those personal stories are.
It's very true. And you know, I'm particularly proud of the fact that in this film, we feature my great-great-grandmother. We have two photos of her, and she was actually a slave. So it is
unusual as well.
It is. I mean, and to have that kind of tie to this terrible history, of course, and their own experiences. Did you know this story before you began working on it?
No, I did not. And in fact, Raquel and I have been talking about doing a narrative film. We had no idea that we'd be doing a documentary. And he had gone to visit his grandmother and came back and said, I think I have a story for us. And I wasn't impressed with it at the beginning. So I told him to go and take some pictures.
Right.
And when he came back with these pictures from the foot wash, I said, I thought you said your grandmother was a part of this organization. And he said, and therein lies our story.
Yes, indeed. And it's, I have to say, it's a pretty shocking story.
Yeah. Yeah.
And painful.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, once we, our first trip down to see what was there, it was so fascinating because we started talking to the older people first. I'm at this point have not witnessed the foot wash, But I'm talking to these old folks, and they have this glorious history that they're telling us about how they cared for one another at a time where it was really, really important that you look out for one another. The communities pooled together to help each other. And then the next year, to actually go to the foot wash and see what it has become, it was shocking to me. So that was really the real push that made us want to tell the history.
Well, I want to talk a bit about the history because I learned a lot, I have to say, watching the film. And these were, or this was a particular a benevolent society, but I'm sure there were many others. After the end of the Civil War, you had freed blacks without a job, without a money, without money, without a place to live, because the plantation system was, in a sense, no more.
Exactly. It's very interesting. You know, emancipation and the transition from slavery to freedom was literally forced upon slaves. They weren't prepared for it. So, you know, you don't have the internet, you don't have, you know, they're not reading newspapers. They're suddenly, you have millions of
slaves freed.
Correct. And as you said, you know, without shelter, without money, without ways to bury their dead or to take care of themselves, it's just a really shocking kind of experience. And the newly freed slaves respond to this crisis with an audacious strategy. They come together and they form benevolent societies. Every newly freed slave community had one.
Right.
And that was the engine to transition freed slaves. They used the benevolent societies to educate their children, to take care of their sick, and to bury their dead.
In fact, from the film, the importance of having this dignified burial is so powerful because in many ways they had seen, you know, their dead comrade slaves, but not buried or buried in a very undignified kind of way.
Yeah, and so you get the change in term, and instead of someone dying, it's a home going. You know, they're going to glory. You have to raise the stakes and the burial because the body means something. Mm-hmm. The life meant something. And so then burials became very important. And the benevolent societies are not like any other community or immigrant community that comes to this country. They all seem to find ways to have these benevolent societies. There were Jewish benevolent societies, Italian, Irish. So it is not unlike any other ethnic group that came here and needed communal help.
There was a description, I guess, about how strict some of these people were. A description, I guess there's a small church or house where a lot of the meetings go on and someone walking with a long stick.
That's right.
You know, making sure you didn't talk during the meetings or during worship.
Correct. And some people call them the small church, but it's actually the Society Hall, the Benevolent Society Hall.
Feels like a church,
and,
I guess.
And looks like a church.
It does. Yeah.
But the taxation, the dues for, you know, were for speaking out of turn, for wearing the wrong colors, for not attending a meeting.
You had to have an excuse.
Right.
And, you know, the thing that's fascinating about this as well is that this is an organization that was created by uneducated men, and yet they followed parliamentary procedure.
Yes.
There was a president, a vice president, a treasurer, a sergeant at arms, and these are people who you've considered uneducated.
Yeah, they drafted a constitution.
They drafted a constitution, yeah. So it's amazing that these six men created something that 125 years later is still in existence. They still meet once a month. They still bury their dead. It's amazing.
Well, and there's also a queen, Ora M. Burks, right?
Yes, that's correct.
So something sounds like she decided that this organization should have a queen and a crown.
Yeah, Ms. Burks crowned herself.
Yeah, and but she took over from, there were other queens.
Right.
You know, the interesting thing is that women were involved with the Sikh committees, but mm-hmm. they weren't the president. They weren't elected right. to the leadership roles in the benevolent society. So the queen then becomes very important.
Mm-hmm. Where did you find some of this old footage? And we see a lot of old footage, Raquel.
Well, I did a lot.
Ipatha was our archival historian,
okay.
And she did her job well.
Yeah, I did a lot of the research myself. Kelly Glover, who is our line producer, and I did a lot of the research ourselves. And it was one of those things where when I got to a point where I didn't quite know where to go, then we had an archivist who would lead us in the direction. And but it was a painstaking process because there aren't a lot of photographs, so a lot of things had to suggest what we were talking about, which made it even more difficult. But we were very lucky that we were able to find some of, especially the moving images. And then in the editing, we were able to grain some of those up to give them the look, of an old piece of film. One piece in particular of the fairgrounds that worked beautifully for the Fairhope Fairground, the foot wash grounds, because it literally looks like the parking area, which is a big pasture where all of these buses and trucks come. So we were able to really find some things that would represent what we wanted.
And we were also very fortunate to be able to get some footage, photos, and background materials from actual Fairhope Benevolent Society members.
About a minute before our first break here, but to you, Raquel, then, part of the what Fairhill did was every fall after the harvest, there was this celebration. I mean, there was and that's not unusual in a rural community.
Yes, there was a celebration. It was called the Society Turnout, and it was to honor and celebrate the anniversary of the Fairhope Benevolent Society. It starts out with them, having a religious ceremony, a program, and selling fish sandwiches as part of fellowship afterwards, and then it evolves
or devolves.
I want to get to that
slowly into other
but
things.
But we see them in, wearing white,
yes.
And the men
regal.
With white aprons, very regal.
Yeah, a lot of pomp and circumstance.
Yeah, very. It was definitely a ceremony. It was. And the men wore white aprons. Sometimes they had blue capes. Mm-hmm. Everyone had on white gloves. It was ritual.
Yeah.
It was ritual.
Well, let's take that short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. That's Ipatha Murkison joining us along with Raquel Metcalf, talking about their film called The Contradictions of Fairhope. In fact, you can see it tonight at 7 o'clock at International House in West Philadelphia, followed by a Q&A with our guests. We're going to take a very short break and then get back to our conversation. Any questions or comments you might have, that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, the Academy of Vocal Arts, presents Don Quixote, March 2nd through 9th, in AVA's Helen Corning Warden Theater, and March 12th and 14th at Centennial Hall in Haverford. Jules Massenet's opera is a lyrical ode to the chivalrous idealist Don Quixote. Christopher Makatsouris conducts the AVA Opera Orchestra, with staging by Tito Capobianco. 215-735-1685 or avaopera.org.
The budgetary discussions currently taking place in Washington present challenges for people in our community and for WHYY. Yet, at the same time, we have continued to expand our services. I'm Bill Morazzo. Your support to WHYY in the last 5 years has offset government losses, yet resulted in the growth of the services you rely on. A donation today will enable us to continue to fulfill our promise to you. Visit WHYY.org to make a donation.
Sheryl Sandberg has already gotten a lot of attention as one of Facebook's top executives. She says she's not enough.
The blunt truth is we've ceased making progress at the top, in any industry anywhere in the world.
She's telling women to lean in on their careers. Our roundtable will dig into that argument next time on Tell Me More.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane. So how did a benevolent society that was started by and for freed black slaves in Alabama to care for the sick and the dead become the site of a sprawling festival that hawks drugs, sex, and guns? That's the story told in this documentary, The Contradictions of Fair Hope, being shown tonight at International House in West Philadelphia. The makers of this film with us here in our Philadelphia studios, well-known actor Esapatha Murkison and attorney Raquel Metcalf. And again, any questions or comments you might have, or if you have any connections to this particular story, we'd love to hear from you at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. So, Raquel, it sounds like Fair Hope and this community did rather well into the beginning of the 20th century.
Yes.
And then, of course, you've got the Great Migration North. You've got the Civil Rights Movement.
Yeah.
How did that change this community?
Fair Hope Benevolent Society is thriving. It's powerful. Their members are doing well. And then, as we say in the film, things get complicated.
Yeah.
You've got northern migration where blacks are leaving the South, moving north for better economic opportunities, which serves to diminish the membership of many benevolent societies in the South. You've got eventually the civil rights movement coming, where blacks begin in many cases to assimilate and in some cases become less loyal to African American organizations. You've got the United States Supreme Court coming down with decisions that white insurance companies now must start to sell the same products, burial insurance, that the African American benevolent societies are selling, which serves to diminish the membership. And then you've got the expansion of the black middle class in the 70s, 80s, and even into the 90s. And all of this works to diminish the need for benevolent societies and diminishes the continuity from generation to generation. And the members and people who know about it start to replace self-interest and personal greed with benevolence.
Well, let me pick up on that. It might be hard even to describe it on the radio, but we're talking about something that called the foot wash or foot wash that has evolved over the over time.
Yeah, and it took a while for that to happen. I mean, like Raquel said earlier, it started out with fellowship after the turnout. And then, at some point, people started, instead of bringing food, they started selling food. And then in the 40s, this moonshine is introduced. In the 50s and 60s, gambling is introduced. In the 70s, women are, and 80s, drugs. And so it continually, what we've decided to call a devolution, it continued to devolve until it's at this point now where upwards of 100,000 people descend on this small area like clockwork. There's no advertisement. There's absolutely no promotion. And it's called foot wash simply because it has no biblical connotation, simply because they're in the woods. And when they come out, their feet are dirty.
Mm. And what we see in this film are older people, and I know your grandmother, who's 99, still living there on 300 acres, but you see older people, you see the little community building that's part of the Benevolent Society, and then just, as you say, 100,000 people, trucks, vehicles, tents, all set up in this community.
We, as Epatha and I say, it sets up this splendid dichotomy of heaven and hell, where they are literally clashing.
But there's prostitution going on there. I mean, there people are selling sex
That's the hell side.
That's the hell side.
Yes.
But and side by side with your grandmother,
exactly.
For instance.
Yeah, it's really. It's troublesome to the Fair Hope members, but you know, they have stubbornly decided to continue with their fellowship, mm-hmm. their annual meetings, and the Fairhope's mission.
Ibe, there are a number of interviews here with some of the they're not all young folks, but with people that come to the foot wash,
right.
They have no idea. They don't know where they are. They don't know this history. They don't know who these older people are.
No. And, you know, that was a part of what I think was our personal mission with this film as well, because we both say that, you know, without your past, if you don't know where you've come from, it's very difficult to know where you're going. And it was one of the things that we wanted to do. We wanted to ask, do you know what started here? Do you know what goes on here on Sunday morning? And that's the unfortunate thing, is that so much of the history mm-hmm. is being lost because of the almighty dollar. And these young people are losing a very rich, rich part of their history. And the fact that it's still in existence is really quite extraordinary, because the foot wash is pretty much engulfing the little area where the society hall is.
You did a number of the interviews of people at the foot wash, mm-hmm. Just, you know, going crazy for a couple of days. Were people willing and open to talk with you?
Yeah, you know, everybody wants their 15 minutes of fame. So we really didn't have... I thought we would have more problems than we had, but people were very open. And, you know, we also were given, you know, tremendous access because of my family's involvement in the Benevolent Society. So, you know, that's how we were able to even find where it is in the woods. And, you know, Epatha has had her own ways of getting into some of those tents.
I should say, we'll get to that. But I should say that some of the footage is, you know, basically you're seeing people having sex.
Yes.
Or what looks darn mm-hmm. close to sex.
Yeah.
You see guns.
Yes.
You see places that...
So they sell guns. There's prostitution. There are drugs. And
gambling.
Gambling.
And signs and, you know, yeah. signs that tell you exactly...
Signs that are very vivid about yeah. what is happening in the tents. Yeah.
So how did you get in some of the tents?
Well, you know, we wanted to see if we could get our camera in. And Raquel had gone the year before, and he was remembered. Because Raquel doesn't quite look like he belongs in that whole thing. So
you can say that.
Yeah, very tall man. And so we went back to the tent, Magic's tent, and asked, could we bring our camera in? And he said, well, you know, you can't come in, but they can come in. And I said, when can we do that? And he was like, you know, give us like an hour and a half or 2 hours.
And why did he not want you to come in?
Because, you know, he said immediately people would recognize me
right.
as Van Buren. And they...
And you would go and arrest them all, right?
And he had customers. So I greased his palm a little, and he let us in.
Wow.
He didn't let me in, but he let the cameras in, and we were able to get 30 minutes worth of film out of the mm. magic tent.
And the magic tent is where a lot of, looks like, sex was going
exactly.
on.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah. Was it prostitution? Could you figure out if it was prostitution?
Well, they say dancing.
Dancing.
But, you know, right. you would see, you knew more than that was going on.
Were you shocked by
the next
the
year? The next year. When I saw the footage, yes, I was absolutely shocked, because we're also talking about very young women.
Right.
And, you know, there's a lot of talk now about human trafficking and so forth. And these women were, you know, very, very young. And the following year, I said, listen, I'm making this film. I need to see I need to be able to come into the tent. And he said, okay. And the minute I stepped into a tent, this guy came up to me and he was like, Van Buren, can I get a picture with you? Like, let's step out the tent. But, you know, to be in the tent and observing I don't even know what to say about it. It was an incredible experience, and you know, we had gotten to know a few of the girls because we interviewed them, and they were very happy to see me. And I think it had a lot to do with the fact that we really asked them questions, things that people have never asked them before. And so they really took to us.
Yeah, we were asking them, what did you want to be when you grew up, or when you
question they never heard before,
or do you vote,
what do you really think about freed slaves?
They really appreciated the human side that we were focusing on.
Let me just reintroduce the two of you, talking with Esipaitha Murkison, co-director, co-executive producer of The Contradictions of Fair Hope. Also with us is Raquel Metcalf, co-director, co-executive producer and writer of The Contradictions of Fair Hope. And the film is being screened tonight at the International House in West Philadelphia, presented by Scribe Video Center. In fact, followed by a Q&A with our guests. And we are talking about this particular film. It traces the beginning of a benevolent society in a small rural part of Alabama back in the 19th century. And it has now become a site where people just go crazy for a couple of days. And it raises a whole host of questions about history, about tradition, and about generations as well. And I do want to play a clip from The Contradictions of Fair Hope. And this is Faya Rose Torre. She's a civil rights activist and attorney. Let's listen to that clip.
It's their land. And of course, in America, they have a right to do anything with the land that they choose. But I think if their ancestors were alive today, and if they knew the suffering that their ancestors endured, they would not dare desecrate that land with what I call the new type of slavery. See, there's different kinds of slavery. We were physically enslaved for hundreds of years, but this new type of slavery is a slavery of the mind, a mental slavery, which is the most dangerous type of slavery. Because when you're so removed from the greatness of your past and your ancestors, and you could take land that was won through blood, sweat, and tears and turn it into grounds for prostitution and drugs, then you have bought into the new type of slavery.
Do you see it that way?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's what I was saying earlier, is when you lose your past, you lose your future. And what our ancestors went through for so long, that and specifically on land that was so important in feeding families and feeding communities, that it is a form of desecration. Mm. And unfortunately, these young girls, I think, literally the difference between them and me is that I was encouraged, because I saw girls who, if they had had an opportunity, that they were bright. Mm-hmm. They had ideas. They thought conceptually, but they were never encouraged. And so they're perpetuating this loss of humanity and loss of history, and it's unfortunate.
Well, and just picking up on that and going back to you, Raquel, but the history is right there. I think that's what makes this film so powerful, is mm-hmm. that it's really side-by-side history, and yet what we see are two so different worlds.
Yeah, and the sadness is that so many of the young people and the among the hundreds of thousands of people who have come there year after year after year, they don't appreciate the history and how precious it is that this community has one of the last functioning benevolent societies in the United States.
But what's also so interesting is even some conflicts within this community about who owned the land, and if you own the land, are you responsible for what happens on that land, and do you know? And if you don't know, why don't you know what's going on there? You tap into that as well.
We do. And, traditionally in the Black community, particularly in the South, the key to success and power, historically, it was owning land. Mm-hmm. And at a certain point, If you have land, you have the power to oppress. And that's what we find mm-hmm. happening with the landowners who are using their land for grounds for prostitution and to sell drugs and so forth.
And now that they're getting older, the difficulty now is that it's overtaken them, and they really were at their wit's end at how they could prevent it. And, you know, those few who are making the money were not thinking community anymore. So it now there's a bone of contention of who owns what little plot, and it's permeated the benevolent society as well.
And was there a foot wash? It looks like it's very hot. So was
September?
September. Mm-hmm. So
the fourth week of September is when it occurs.
Okay, and I'm assuming it's pretty hot down there in Alabama at that time.
Yes, generally.
Yeah, there have been times where, I mean, when we were shooting, it would be like 103, 110. And then, you know, there were times when we shot the foot wash and it rained the entire time and it would be cooler. So you're kind of left up to
Mother Nature.
Mother Nature, exactly. But, you know, even in heavy, and I'm talking torrential rain, there's a tent happening. There are vendors. It's just extraordinary. Yeah. There may be less people, but it does not stop it.
Yeah, it rained in 2010, and the sheriff said that the total count was 70,000.
Wow, through torrential
through
rain.
Torrential rain.
What has been? I know this. You've shown this at some festivals. I'm curious. What's been the reaction to this film? And I have to say, it really. I've been haunted by it, and I watched it yesterday afternoon.
It's been fascinating. We found that we have fared extraordinarily well at the Black Film Festivals, winning 8 Best Documentary Film Festivals, including the Pan-African Film Festival in Cannes. But we have been rejected by most every white film festival except the Philadelphia Independent Film Festival and the Teaneck Film Festival.
Why do you think that is?
I think that there is a disconnect with white people and slavery, that they don't want to hear about it anymore, that it is our problem. It is something back in the woods. It's difficult enough dealing with Black folks in the inner city, and now you want us to deal with them in the woods, in the dark. So I think what has happened is that Black folks see the educational focus of the film, and they see the call to action that comes from the film. But it's been interesting.
Let's take that a very short break. We'll get back to our conversation talking with Esapaitha Murkison and Raquel Metcalf about their film called The Contradictions of Fair Hope. Again, it's going to be shown tonight at the International House in West Philadelphia, presented by Scribe Video Center. And our guests will be there for a Q&A. Q&A on Radio Times as well, 1-888-477-9499. We'll be right back.
Guardian Nurses Healthcare Advocates supports WHYY, serving the region for 10 years. These registered nurses accompany individuals to doctors, help get second opinions, and help with insurance claims. GuardianNurses.com. Guardian Nurses, lighting your way through the healthcare maze.
On the next Fresh Air, Adrian Young, a former hip-hop DJ who's now a composer and producer and takes his inspiration from the soul music of the 60s and European film composers like Ennio Morricone. Young produced the new Ghostface Killah album and produced and co-wrote a new album with William Hart, who was the lead singer of the Delphonics. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. The wait for the white smoke begins as the Catholic Cardinals conclave gets underway. Also, actors Zachary Quinto and Cherry Jones and company on making Tennessee Williams' The Glass Menagerie new again. That's Public Radio's daily digest of news and culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
The Philadelphia Speakers Series supports WHYY and is presented by Widener University, continuing its sold-out season at the Kimmel Center on March 18th with former President of Mexico Vicente Fox, sponsored by WHYY and BNY Mellon Wealth Management.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowen, again talking with Esipatha Murkison and Raquel Metcalf about their film, The Contradictions of Fair Hope. Raquel Metcalf is Vice President, Chief Counsel of Ameriprise Financial, and this film is about a benevolent organization that began in Alabama in the late 19th century. His 99-year-old grandmother, who lives alone, just got a cane, and takes care of cattle on her 300-acre farm, still lives down in this part of Alabama. Esipatha Murkison, of course, a well-known and award-winning actress or actor, played Lieutenant Anita Van Buren on Law and Order. I think you were the longest played character.
Longest running character. Wow. And I'm the longest running African-American on primetime television.
You go. I should also add that she received an Emmy, a Golden Globe, and a SAG Award for her performance as Nanny Crosby in the HBO movie Lackawanna Blues. And you're going to be in a Tyler Perry movie?
Yes. He's actually a producer. It's a Tina Chisholm film called Meet the Peoples. Yeah, it's my first comedy.
Well, I do want to talk about that, but let me give out that phone number again and even just finish up on this particular story. We're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. So the Benevolent Society, Raquel, they become a 501c3. So they become a nonprofit, but I have to say it's a small community. One wonders at the end of the film whether this will survive, and most of the members are quite old.
Yeah, as part of the story and as part of our contribution, Epatha and I wanted to do something, to take some type of action. And so we gifted Fair Hope with its 501c3 status.
Oh, wow.
Hoping that that would make it easier for them to sustain themselves through donations, deductions, grants from the state and the feds. But Fair Hope is suffering. You know, you can give them the 501c3 status, but they, the members are very old now, and they are suffering from a lack of leadership.
Oh, interesting, interesting. And do you wonder, question whether it will continue into the future?
Epatha, and I'm not naive. I think that it's going to be difficult, but this is an organization that knows a lot about survival. Mm-hmm. You know, they've survived Northern migration, the civil rights movement, the Supreme Court cases that we talked about. They've survived the expansion of the black middle class that has really worked to diminish the membership, but they're stubborn, and it's not rocket science. All they need is young leadership. They need new members to sustain themselves. And I'm really happy to say that as a result of our film, young people in the community have learned about Fair Hope, and they have gained three new members, which is a small win.
Yeah.
But Epatha, I think, is less hopeful than I am.
Yeah, I am. I think that it's going to be lost in the shuffle, unfortunately. I am encouraged by the three new members, because indeed I think that is the change that is needed. But I don't know if I have a lot of faith in it. It's so huge, and it's completely engulfed by this activity. And when you see it, and you see that little society hall sitting in the middle of all of this, it's kind of hard to be positive about its future.
What does your grandmother think?
You know, my grandmother is realistic. I don't believe she feels that they need to get young people. It becomes very complicated, though, because my grandmother and the other elderly Fair Hope members have not done what they need to do to make outreach to the young people.
Like the internet, right?
Exactly. So I say to her, it goes both ways.
Yeah. Now, just to understand, I mean, she sounds perhaps like a movie in herself.
Yeah, she is.
She is.
That'll be your next film about
right,
her grandmother.
Exactly.
So she lives alone on a farm with cattle and just got a cane.
And and has vivid memories of slavery and is an amazing historian who really unlocked the history of Fairhope for Epatha and me.
And she really is, she really loves telling the stories. And that's the thing that we're losing. We're losing the oral tradition. And that's how we were able to make this film, because people wanted to talk about the way it was and what it looked like and how they did it. They wanted us to know. Mm-hmm. And that's so important, that we continue that tradition of passing along the stories.
And with your grandmother, she's 99, so she was born in the beginning of the 20th century. So would it
1913.
So would it have been her mother or her grandmother who was a slave?
Her grandmother was a slave.
Wow, in Alabama?
Yes, and emancipated. And so my grandmother is able to talk with me about, you know, when she was a little girl, she said that she was really curious about slavery. And she would ask her, you know, what did it feel like to be free? You know, how did you find out? So she was able to pass these stories along to me and my family members.
And did she go to that one-room schoolhouse, your grandmother?
My grandmother didn't go to the Fairhope School, but she supported it, and a lot of my relatives did. And that's one of the things that was really special about the Fairhope Benevolent Society. Most benevolent societies would contribute funds to education, but Fairhope formed its own school, and Fairhope had a sick committee as a form of their health care, and as a result did more than just bury the dead, which was the primary focus for African-American benevolent societies.
Epatha was talking before the break about the fact that this film got into largely black film festivals, mostly rejected by white festivals, except for, I guess, the one here in Philadelphia. What message or what do you take away from that?
Well, I take away two things. One is, you know, there is a broad ignorance gap. Americans know very little about benevolent societies and the important history that they played in general. They know far less, obviously, about African-American benevolent societies. So, you know, and then you're, as Epatha, I believe, said, you're taking them into the woods, into this, you know, the foot wash.
Yes.
Also, it's very difficult, I feel, for whites to personalize, in many cases, and care about slavery. That's just a reality.
There's
guilt. There is the position, I didn't have anything to do with it. Let's get over it. And what I'm learning, one of the shocking things for me about the film is that I'm also learning that as a result of our film, young African Americans, I'm finding it's difficult for them to personalize or care about the institution and the history of slavery. Mm-hmm. We've heard a lot of them say, you know, we got to move on. We have a black president now. You know, we're as free as we're ever going to get. Why go back?
Mm.
So that's been a wake-up call for, I think, both of us.
You want to add to that?
No, absolutely. I agree with him 100%. Yeah.
You were in the movie Lincoln, and Steven Spielberg, obviously, this large mega film to talk about some of this history and to talk about emancipation and Lincoln himself. And you play Thaddeus Stevens, Pennsylvania's Thaddeus Stevens' wife, I guess.
She was. It's unclear whether Lydia Hamilton Smith is her name, and it was unclear if they were married. But she was certainly was in that position, I think they have homes here and in D.C. as well. But she ended up being a very wealthy woman, one of the very few women of color who owned her own home, and it was a fascinating story. Again, she was someone I knew nothing about. I say it's so important that we know about the history But she was very much a part of Thaddeus Stevens' life. And indeed, as you watch the film, you see how important his argument became, what it truly meant to him.
Yeah. And in the film, I don't know if it's true or not, he brings the amendment home and lets her read it.
Yeah, I don't know if it was true or not. I've never been able to find any information on it. But I thought it was a lovely touch.
And I wonder with a film like that, very different from your documentary, whether there is more openness to think about some of this history and to think about the Civil War and to think about slavery and to somehow come to terms with our past.
Perhaps. I think that the film was more of a focus on Lincoln, though, the man that he was, a more I found this Tony Kushner's screenplay made him seem more real because he's such a larger than life type of character, and it really just focused on that 13th Amendment. But I think it's important that people understand history, and so no matter what particular thing you're talking about, American history is so important for our young people, and that's, you know, all of us, to know our American history. And that was a very hard fight, the 13th Amendment. And I think that Lincoln tells the story well.
Let me get some callers in at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. We have Mr. Walker from Somerset, New Jersey. Go ahead, you're on Radio Times.
Yes, as I was driving, leaving the gym from working out, I'm listening to you, Marty, and listening to this great story that you're bringing up. This is about the second time that I've heard this on another station, and I applaud your guests and Ms. Murkison for taking on this project. I'm a student of history and love chasing down the cemeteries. My question to you and your guests, is how much of the research or in the documentary, I don't know if I'll be able to catch that documentary tonight, but I did look at the trailer why you people were talking, and was fascinated with this. But how much of the research did you do on the cemeteries, and are you going to highlight that on a website, the databasing, the website? Because kids, I do agree with you, these kids need to get this information, and they need to understand who they are and where they came from. If not, I agree with you. He doesn't get the past is doomed to fail in the future.
Well, I appreciate the call to Radio Times, and we do see the local cemetery this documentary.
It's not the local cemetery. It's actually the Fairhope Benevolent Society Cemetery, where the members can be buried and are buried. And I think the fascinating thing for Ipatha and me is that, you know, we were able to go there, and the freed slaves are still buried there. Some of the gravestones are handmade. And
it's fascinating. Yeah. And we even had a moment where we were able to film an actual interment, which was something I'd never seen. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that I so realized is how much history is in a cemetery. Mm-hmm. You know, my eyes were opened in so many ways while we were filming this. Things that, you know, as a young person, I sort of threw off the side. So, you know, we're saying this about young people, but, you know, I'm also guilty of not knowing things myself. And so going into the cemeteries and just seeing these handmade headstones was just the most incredible thing. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, your caller is right. There's so much history in a cemetery.
Thanks for the call. Are you going to do another film together? Have you started thinking about? Yes.
Yeah, we'd love to. I mean, you know, we work very well together, and
and he's padding.
So yeah, I think we are. We definitely are.
Well, and you said you're doing your first comedy, right? A Tyler Perry production.
Yeah, it's he's presenting the Tina Chisholm film called Meet the Peoples, and I play Daphne Peoples. It's a family of upwardly mobile black folk, and their daughter comes home for a big event, and her boyfriend, who she hasn't told her parents about yet, shows up unexpectedly. And David Alan Greer and Kerry Washington and Craig Robinson from The Office. It was a great cast. It premieres May 10 this year.
And was it totally different to play a comedic character or play in a comedy?
It was totally different. I mean, I even get to sing in this film.
Oh,
so,
you do?
Yeah, so there were wigs and eyelashes and pumps and everything. So it's so not Van Buren.
Well, it's been such a great pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times. Esipetha Murkison and Raquel Metcalf are guests today on Radio Times. And again, a screening of The Contradictions of Fair Hope tonight at 7 at International House in West Philadelphia, presented by Scribe Video Center. Katie Ricciardi, our intern, and Kevin Griffin, our engineer. Susan Greenbaum, Patty McMahon, Dennis Devine, and Debbie Builder produced the program. We're ending with a song from Contradictions of Hope. Tommy Dorsey's I'm Going to Live the Life I Sing in My Songs.
I'm going to live the life I sing about in my songs. I'm going to stand for right, always showing wrong. If I'm in a crowd, if I'm alone on the street or in my home, I'm gonna live the life I sing about in my song.
So how about I do that correctly? That's Thomas A. Dorsey's I'm Going to Live the Life I Sing in My Song, sung by Allison Williams, arranged by Philadelphia's Christian McBride. In fact, he composed the score for this movie. And coming up next, it's Here and Now. You can join us tomorrow on Radio Times. We'll be talking about the 50th anniversary of Gideon V. Wainwright.